The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
The sun is shining. It will slowly warm things up today. Still a chilly day, but the big yellow ball in the sky has returned. Ah, man. How do people live in Seattle? Beautiful city. I mean, it's neat and very cool out there, and I love it. But that seasonal affective disorder, that's got to be real. I can't do, 20 days out of the month of overcast. Cannot do it. Need me some sunshine and whatever vitamins that puts into your body. Here's something. Here's a wonderful, we might call this, I don't know how this sounds, vitamin F. It's the injection of truth that comes from It's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
So good. I got to hear. Sometimes you need some Zeppelin. This is one of those times. So I'm graduating from high school and stuff. Drop the needle down on side one, disc one of Physical Graffiti. Little custard pie. 866-660-5759. All right. Let me unpack this, because welcome to the next few months. I mean, well, probably welcome to the next almost 9 months, all the way till Election Day, since it appears the Democrats got nothing. I mean, nothing. They certainly don't want to talk about actual issues. I mean, it's funny. Well, didn't we just have a debate where they talked about actual issues? Yeah. And they rolled out their climate nonsense. And they rolled out all kinds of other things. But when you've got an economy this strong and a country doing this well, it's just hard. It's hard to lose. It's hard to knock out an incumbent under those circumstances. I mean, in 1996, we had an honorable and wonderful man, Bob Dole, but we had relative peace and relative prosperity. And so there's just no beating Clinton. I don't know if a better candidate might have beaten Obama in 2012. It's too painful to even think about. But, you know, God closes some doors that others may open. And rather than, you know, maybe going through the second term of Mitt Romney, we got the Trump era. And the sun is shining and birds are singing. And it's just a magnificent, magnificent thing. But along the path toward the Trump second term, you're going to get nonsense like we're going through today. And it all started to unfold last night. So just plug in. Follow me along here. And as with any diatribe of mine, if there's something you find fault with or view somewhat differently or totally differently, that's why we have phone lines, 866-660-5759. So as I go into kind of a special report on this, other things that are hanging from the rafters include Saturday's Nevada caucuses. And as soon as you say caucuses, panic sets in Democrats. America, I think they've got all kinds of layers of fail-safe, safety nets, plan B and C, something, anything, so they don't get a cluster like they had in the Iowa caucuses. So Nevada weighs in tomorrow night, and Bernie probably wins that. And the battle is kind of for second. You know, please keep in mind, Bloomberg not on the ballot. South Carolina primary next Saturday. Bloomberg not on the ballot. And you know who might be at the top of that ballot? Joe Biden, who is officially not, he's not dead. I'm not dead yet. Very, very Monty Python-esque. Truly anything can happen. And so the Bloomberg factor remains a kind of a nebulous thing with only a, there are only two things we have to grab a hold of right now in evaluating Bloomberg. One is the ad campaign, which has been an enormous boon to his prospects, an enormous positive for him. I mean, you got hundreds of millions of dollars and a pretty good ad agency, you will get your message out there. And that brings all the charges of, oh, he's trying to buy the election, trying to buy the election. I don't for a minute believe you can do that. I just don't. Eventually, if there's something the matter with you, it will out. It will become clear. And voters will go, big checkbook, but I don't think so. I mean, we never got President Ross Perot or President Steve Forbes. Okay, we just didn't. Money is not enough to get you even the nomination of a major party. So this notion of Bloomberg going to buy the election, I just don't believe you can. Because eventually you are going to have to show up on a debate stage. Eventually you are going to have to be on, you know, a Sunday show or something like that. But then you get into the triangulation of how – here's something. This is kind of a gut feeling thing. Compare mine with yours. How do you think the media feel about Bloomberg? When Bloomberg eventually goes and sits down with that snake Chuck Todd on Meet the Press, when Bloomberg shows up, you know, to sit down and talk to Stephanopoulos, you know, when Bloomberg shows up to go on, you know, some CNN show, or, wow, even better, MSNBC. MSNBC is so bug-eyed crazy that I think they're probably okay with Bernie. But on the other, how will they treat Bloomberg with the deference and coddling that you come to expect, you know, from a Democrat on a liberal-leaning show? Or are they suspicious? Is Bloomberg maybe not quite as crazy lib as they would like him to be? And will they be suspicious of him? And will they kind of take pot shots at him? I mean, if the media culture, if there were to be some media cabal conference, some meeting, some backroom smoke-filled enclave, whom would they anoint? Whom do they really, really want? I got a partial skeletal theory. Is it maybe Warren? Because they wonder if Biden can remain coherent enough. They're afraid that Bernie will get smoked in 40 states. If they have some kind of Bloomberg reticence. I mean, there's Warren, classical lib, but hard left enough to be appealing to the dominant media culture. You know, there are doubts as to whether she could win, but there are doubts as to whether any of these people can win. So I don't know. There's just that. That's what the intrigue is, thick and interesting. And so it'll be we'll see what kind of storylines we have coming out of Nevada's caucuses on Saturday. So here's the deal. The place to go to find the eyebrows raised and the pearls clutched would, of course, be CNN. So let's go with them. Headline is, you ready? Russia is looking to help Trump win in 2020, election security official told lawmakers. Dateline Washington. The intelligence community's top election security official delivered a briefing to lawmakers last week. They're on top of this, warning them that the intelligence community believes Russia is already taking steps to interfere in the 2020 election with the goal of helping Donald Trump win. Three sources familiar with the matter tell CNN. Well, let's talk about those three sources. Who are they? And let's talk about the intelligence community in general. What do we know about the intelligence community in the era of Trump? We know that the intel community is filled with magnificent heroes and public servants, folks just doing their job, the kind of people who every once in a while can enable us to take out an Iranian kingpin, take out a terrorist. God bless the intelligence community. But the other thing we know about the intelligence community, is there are snakes in there. There are traitors in there. There are political bigots in there. There are Trump haters in there. So what's driving this story? I'll give you one thing that settles it right away, and that is that every reporter on top of this story should demand specific details, and then they'll immediately cocoon up and go, well, we can't tell you because that would reveal the methodology of our intelligence, which, by the way, is a valid answer. How convenient. Last week's briefing, led by election security official Shelby Pearson, I'd like to know a lot about her, and first reported by the New York Times, we already know about them, addressed the overall picture of Russia's efforts, including hacking, weaponizing social media, and attacks on election infrastructure, one of the sources said. The briefer said Russia does favor Trump, but that helping Trump wasn't the only thing they were trying to do, as it was also designed to raise questions about the integrity of the elections process, the source added. Trump became irate in a meeting with outgoing acting director of national intelligence Joseph McGuire for allowing the information about Russia's meddling efforts to be included in the briefing. What they want you to believe is that Trump caught another truth teller trying to tell some truths and shut him down and kicked out the acting DNI, Director of National Intelligence, Joe McGuire, in order to make room for Rick Grenell. Rick Grenell, German ambassador, diplomatic experience, not a lot of intel experience, loves Trump, which makes the media hate him. Trump loyalist, he's referred to, like the only reason he has the job is he loves Trump. Rick Grenell is a great choice. He'll do a great job. And he's not part of the swamp, and he's not shapeable, malleable, corruptible by the media. That's why they hate Grenell. So to tie a bow around it, do we need to keep an eye on things that Russia actually may try to do? Of course. Is it possible that they are trying to do some type of mischief right now? Absolutely. And we should be clear-eyed and focused on that. But the mischief that is far more concretely defined right now is in our own country, in Trump's own administration, with haters and swamp rats and snakes who will absolutely trickle out little dribs and drabs of things that the panting media culture will grab a hold of and pump up to the level of earth-shattering bombshell again, creating headlines like this. Russia already looking to help Trump win in 2020. Election security official tells lawmakers. Cha, 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 cha. So I'll tell you what, Devin Nunes, who the California congressman who is the ranking member of the Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff's Republican counterpart, was on with Laura Ingraham last night. He had a couple of things to say about that. I'll play a couple of those. Let me go ahead and pause, come back, give you some other things we might do today. And 866-660-5759, Mark Davis, 824. Man, can you shoot me a warning with some of those side effects? Woof. High schoolers, here's a golden oldie.
I'm in need of a savior.
So Mr. Ethan's on his way to school. If you are too, God bless you. Here's a little Marshmallow and Khalid. What's this, almost 3 years old? Or ancient in the average kid's view?
I'm tired.
Little Silence. Have a great day, buddy. Love you.
Never gave me a home. So I sit here in the shine.
No silence around here. Filling the silence with all kinds of opinions. Yours, mine, newscast with Gordon Griffin. Just all kinds of noise being made here on the Friday show. Be a part of it at 866-660-5759. I'm Mark Davis. Here's Gordon. It's 8:30.
No one's got to tell me they've seen you on the town with an old girlfriend.
We got a birthday.
No one's got to tell me you look like you fall.
Man, do I love this woman.
Cause you're out of my life now with a wave of her hand.
Little Mary Chapin Carpenter.
You never had it so good, babe.
62 today.
Wow,
so.
And never feel sad.
So this is half her life ago.
Never had it so good, babe. I never had it so bad.
God, just so good. Never had it so good. From Mary Chapin Carpenter. That is from her second album, State of the Heart. When people really started to pay attention to her, it's well before Down to the Twist and Shout or The Bug or just all the various the huge Mary Chapin Carpenter hits. When State of the Heart came out, it was 1989, and I just said, wow, who's this? She had had an album already called Hometown Girl that I then retroactively went back and got and loved that too and loved everything she's done ever since. Mary Chapin Carpenter, born 62 years ago today, in the country hotbed of Princeton, New Jersey. Not everybody's born in Dixie. Who else is big in New Jersey? Hold on, Eddie Rabbit was raised in East Orange, New Jersey, but I want to say that he was born in another country hotbed, Brooklyn. the late, great Eddie Rabbit. Oh, my gosh. Don't get me started. All right, 866-660-5759. Let me do some phone action. And then Devin Nunes, ranking Republican on the House Intelligence Committee. It was on Laura. And either before this half hour is done probably right before this hour is done, I'm going to float something that I want to at least begin the 9 o'clock hour with. There is something, and I want to ask y'all how you feel about it. Well, could you be more vague? There's something that was a big deal. There's something that offended no one forever. Then it offended everyone, sort of. And I want to see if it has worked its way back to acceptability. Okay, there's the template. And let me do that as this hour is closing, like 18 minutes from now or so. And then I'll open 9:05 and maybe I'll have a bunch of calls on it by then. So that's coming up right now. 866-660-5759. We're in Dallas. Henry, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Great. Happy Friday, Mark.
Same to you.
Hey, I had a thought. It made me sad, depressed. And I'm hoping you can tell me why I'm wrong. I think we're seeing the normalization and what could, I guess, lead to the weaponization of socialism as an identity.
Yeah.
As, you know, I'm a socialist. That offends my socialist values.
That's right. where it becomes the touchstone. You know, that rattles my socialist sensibilities. Okay, you're right. In polls reveal, and just an examination of human life reveals, that especially among younger voters, younger people, socialism doesn't carry the stigma that it used to because they are historically illiterate. They have no concept, and globally illiterate. They don't look at Venezuela as a total way to not run your country. And the Cold War is over. You know, the communism has lost its stigma. Nobody's doing the duck and cover drills because the Russians are going to bomb us anymore. So, and with an entire media culture, university culture that is characterizing socialism as fairness and the way to distribute wealth and the way to treat people with kindness and open our borders and all that claptrap, that has resulted absolutely in the normalization of socialism. So far, correct.
It's for some reason, that's just terrifying to me, because when I grew up, you know, back in the 70s, it was It was a dirty word.
Of course. Of course. And it's like the bar has been moved, where a lot of people are now saying, well, Bernie Sanders isn't just a socialist. He's a communist, because maybe, please God, let that have some stigma. But again, the Soviet Union is gone. The only huge communist regime we worry about is China. And right now, the only thing we're worried about with China is stuff going to be on the shelves at Walmart because of the coronavirus. Nobody's worried about Chinese communism in America anymore, at least not enough. So anyway, so your premise is correct, but here's why you don't go diving under the bed just yet. The question is, as the Democrat Party in America perhaps prepares to offer up an actual socialist candidate, how's that going to work out? One of two things will happen. It seems that one of two things will happen. Either the socialist candidate will not prevail for the nomination, or the socialist candidate will prevail, get the nomination, and be beaten like a drum on November 3rd. Either way, it's the delivery of a message that says no matter how popular Bernie might be at some, you know, university, that's not where America is and not where we want to go just yet.
Man, I just see 8-12 years down the road, and it kind of makes me pause. Because you may be an idiot to be a socialist, but you're our idiot.
I wonder.
And the more of those we get, the bigger the problem's going to be.
I know. And if the old quote about if you want to change a society, get control of how people are taught. And people are being taught by socialists, and socialism is being coddled, and its tenets have a grasp around the throat of American higher education. I don't want to get to the point where if we have an actual socialist president and socialist leadership and Democrats willing to either adopt it or go along with it, that we end up with the kind of crises that socialism can bring. I don't want it to get so bad that we learn the lesson the hard way. Henry, thank you. Extremely thoughtful and vital, vital call. I'd say here's the opportunity. Here's what we got is an opportunity to do some teaching, an opportunity for conservatives to do some teaching. And the headmaster right now is a president who will say in every crowded arena that he holds a rally in, we are never going to be a socialist country. And that gets enormous applause. And even the people who are squirrely about Trump and might not know, you know, if they like him or not, I mean, if they hate his guts, they may already be socialists, and it might take a little longer to convert them. But other folks who might have short attention spans or just plugging into politics and just not really paying a whole lot of attention, they may begin to ask themselves, what is the problem with socialism? Why is it a bad idea? And that's when conservatives, from the president to elected Republicans, and we got to have the right elected Republicans to do this. A simple R by your name tells you nothing. Mitt Romney has an R by his name. Copy that. So, and then all the way down to, talk show guys like me. But then the most important people, the most important community is you. It's you. And this is, boy, pardon me for, you know, flogging this issue again. This is why you've got to get on Twitter. This is why you've got to get a Twitter account today. Follow me at Mark Davis, and then take a look at everybody I follow and stuff I post and go, oh, that person sounds interesting. Follow people you agree with. Follow people you disagree with in order to know what they say and make a point that you might. And listen, you don't even have to say anything. Just repost stuff you like that I do. Or stuff you like that Ben Shapiro does, or stuff you like that Molly Hemingway does, or stuff that you think is crazy that some leftist might. Just be a conduit, pointing thing, and then you might want to start putting your toe in the pool of making just some little wry aside comment that you might want to get comfortable with. And then, given those 280 characters, there may be something that you want to actually say. And maybe you got 50 followers, because that's friends and family. But then maybe one of them has 100. Maybe another one of them has 1,000. And they retweet something that you've tweeted or retweeted. Now, why is this a big deal? because the social media that we often revile, and I do too, because social media can be a cesspool of trolls and idiots. But you know why? Because the world contains trolls and idiots. But you know what else the world also contains? Good people. Swayable people. Reachable people for the cause of conservatism. It's what I try to do every day. I'm not an idiot. I'm also trying to attract people to the show. I'm trying to run a business here. But in whatever business you're in, whatever life you lead, if you hop on and become part of the social media army that has as a short-term goal the Trump reelection and as a long-term goal the selling of conservatism to a willing public, you can help save the country from a pendulum swing towards socialism. You. So do that. 846-866-660-5759. We're in Plano. Jeff, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Mark, if I were any better, I'd be you.
Nice. Well, there's a high bar. Thank you.
That's a great response. Love that.
Thanks, man.
The previous caller, I thought I had it exactly right. And I'm thinking about one snippet we could say is that socialism is slavery by a different name.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln, in his final debate with Stephen Douglas, had a great quote. He said, "The ability of one man to say to another, you work and you sweat, you earn bread and I'll eat it." He's, whether you call it the divine right of kings or call it slavery, it is an evil and it needs to be eradicated from the earth.
Man, I got to tell you something. Anybody rolls up with some Lincoln-Douglas debate quotes, that is some high-tone talk show caller action, Jeff. I am in your debt and proud of you and thank you. Okay, speaking of slavery, you know what I wandered into? And I don't even remember what channel was doing it. I'm doing cable apps and just, you know, this and that and thus and such. And darned if somebody wasn't doing it. I don't remember. It wasn't BET. It was some, you know, just a channel that does, you know, shows. That narrows it down. I don't know. But being Black History Month, right? I guess it was maybe the second or third episode, probably the second, of Roots. And I found it, and I flipped over to it, and nobody else was in the house. God forbid, I had 10 minutes to myself. kidding. And no, Ethan was at school, and I just rolled in, and Lisa was, 20 minutes from me. So I just sat down. I said, let's see, who's prattling on cable news and see what's going on. And then I'm flipping through the 200s or 300s or whatever on DirecTV, and I said, well, I'll be doggone. Because I don't think I've revisited Roots in any serious way since it was on 1977, right? And so I'm 19, and it was earth-shattering, life-changing. It was crazy, and also so different than today. Did we really have VCRs by then? When did the VCR come in? My first VCR, serious VCR memory. It probably had to be. It was watching early Letterman. The first talk show I ever had was 6 to 10 in the morning on WOKV in Jacksonville, Florida in 1982. And I would tape Letterman, and then I would do that show, do whatever else was done. And I was probably home by early afternoon, and I would watch the previous night's Letterman on an RCA VHS recorder. But could you videotape Roots? I don't know. Sorry. Anyway, don't bog down. It's episode 2. Kunta Kinte has been snagged from the West African country of his birth, and he's on the slave auction in, was it Annapolis? And so episode 2 takes you from there to Spotsylvania County, Virginia, where he meets Fiddler, the great Lewis Gossett, and Lorne Greene, who is Massa Reynolds. There's some N-bombs being thrown around. Well, duh, because it's 1760-something. And I mean, it's funny. In a way, it's kind of cheesy, old school in some production values and such. There's like 40-year-old Ed Asner, who's the captain of the slave ship, and he's kind of got some reservations. And there's the late, great Vic Morrow as Ames, is it, who's Massa Reynolds' overseer. I mean, I was sucked in. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. So I don't know. I may need to run back and take a walk through that again, because I was that. And the funny thing is, I guess we had VCRs, but the point I've heard so many people make is that the thing about Roots is you had to watch it every night. And then you'd show up the next day at work and everybody would talk about it. Man, you see Roots? I don't see Roots. And that never happens anymore. Now shows are dumped on Netflix, all 12 episodes. You get to them when you get to them. We don't have the commonality of the viewing experience anymore. So anyway, all right, pardon that little burst of ADD. All right, but I remember this. I told you there was something I was going to ask you a question about. Has something fallen back into favor? Has something been destigmatized? Which I don't know if that hardly ever happens. Let me take the break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to set it up about 60 seconds, and we'll add a topical layer. We got calls on a million things. But I'm going to ask you if something that used to be shocking, simply no longer is. I'll tell you what I'm talking about next. 8:51. Okay, how many of you think you knew what I was talking about? Here's the big reveal. You ready? All right, 8:57. The thing I just want to check with you, this is one of those things where I cast the net out over your life and your impressions, your perceptions, and see, just sort of take the temperature of where we are on something. I mentioned there was something that never bothered anybody forever. And then all of a sudden people figured this is bad, and it was stigmatized. It was terrible. You couldn't hardly find anybody availing themselves of what I'm about to describe. And I don't hear hardly anything about that anymore. So either the stigmatization worked and nobody does this anymore, or people are doing it and nobody cares anymore. You ready? Fur. Ding, 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 ding. How many of you had it right? Fur. Walking the red carpet at the Oscars in 1947 or something. If you got something, you got Betty Grable wearing fur, nobody cares. Like, oh, look at the fur. Then when did fur get stigmatized? When did people go, man, we do not need to be clubbing seals or, you know, skinning chinchillas or whatever we got to do, or ermines or what? We just don't need to. Synthetics are getting good. There's just no reason to be killing animals to wear a coat. There's just no need to do that. And people got so upset about it that you'd find people who were still wearing fur. You remember people would douse them with like red paint signifying blood on the streets of Beverly Hills. They're like, oh, you pig. But the synthetics got so good that you'd have idiot activists dousing somebody with red paint who was wearing synthetic fur. So if it gets that good, you run the risk of being perceived as a monster because you're wearing fur, but you're not wearing fur. You're wearing synthetic. Now, this is a style thing that my wife cares about not one bit, that I don't know a whole lot of people really who do. Maybe it's generational. Maybe it just went away. But here's my question. Is there still has a bustling fur market returned, or is it just completely gone? Is it like the buggy whip industry? It's just a vestige of the past. And if it is, there's still furriers, aren't there? Aren't there still stores where right now I could drive over to someplace and get a fur coat if I was inclined? I'm not inclined, because I think that I rather agreed with people who said that there's just no, we have dominion. Biblically, we as the human beings have dominion over the animals of the planet. We can do, quite frankly, whatever we want. However, we are called not to be unduly unkind or unduly, usurpatious of, animal rights do not inherently exist. They exist to the degree that we bestow those rights. Okay. And we bestow a lot of rights to animals. We should. The right not to, we make laws where you can't, torture your dog and stuff like that. In the marketplace, we went to a point where fur kind of went away. So has it come back at all? Is there somebody in your life walking around a fur coat? And how are you feeling about that? Is that okay? Has that become okay? Have we gotten over that? Or is that still, don't do that? Fur roundtable. Just one of our many layers of conversation as the 9 o'clock hour kicks off next. 866-660-5759. Grab a line. I'm dying to see what your thoughts are on this and 10 other things. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.